Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Video Store Nightmares, the podcast where we discuss the strange, the bizarre, and the mutated films of the VHS era. Tonight, we're talking about a co-Italian Miami production, the best of its kind, 1994's Plankton, also known as Creatures from the Abyss. My name is Luke, and I'm joined by Leland.
Listeners, you can find 1994's Creatures from the Abyss on YouTube for free on, get this, the director's official YouTube channel.
Yeah, he has a, I have the DVD and there's an interview with him on the DVD, and it's literally just like probably in his living room with someone holding a camera for like 10 minutes. And it's very casual, very lo-fi. Like, I get the feeling that if his movies aren't available, he'll be like, fuck it, I'll just put them on the internet. Like, that's the kind of guy he struck me as.
Can you imagine this being your first film and going on to have a career?
Oh, definitely. I'm glad this man went on to have a career. I unfortunately have not seen much of his work. So his name is, if we didn't say it, is Alvaro Passeri. And this was his first movie. He went on to direct The Golden Grain, The Mummy Theme Park, Flight to Hell, and Psycho Vision. None of which I've seen, but some are on his YouTube channel, so I'm curious to explore them.
I'd imagine we will be covering at least one other of his films.
I hope so. I hope there's one that's that good.
Do you think, surely this is not a man who peaked on his first movie, right?
I can't. All I have to go on is IMDb ratings. And it looks like it was all downhill until Psycho Vision, when he like doubled his score.
Doubled from what? It's like 2 to 4 isn't very many stars.
All right, so we might. So he started with Plankton, is rated a 4.3. Golden Grain doesn't have a rating. It, maybe not enough people have seen it. The Mummy Theme Park has a 3.7. Flight to Hell has a 3.7. Psycho Vision has a 7.1.
I'm going to need a little bit of clarification. By The Mummy Theme Park, is that the name of the entire film, or did he direct a film for some kind of theme park ride called The Mummy?
I was curious as well. I had to investigate. No, it is a movie called The Mummy Theme Park.
All right.
And it's a terrible title for exactly the reason you're pointing out, but that's what it's called. I have no desire to watch that one. But to get back to Creatures from the Abyss, which title do you like better, Plankton or Creatures from the Abyss?
I'm going to go with Plankton, because if you try to initially just look up Creatures from the Abyss, you're going to find a lot of general run-of-the-mill documentaries about deep sea life. You know, anglerfish, glowing things, stuff men were never meant to see.
Mm-hmm.
Fathoms under the ocean. You could argue that maybe man was never meant to see this film. And we braved the depths for this episode.
I think I like Plankton better too. It's definitely more memorable. And I think better fits like the tone of this movie, which is very unique. It's got a unique tone.
Before we get into the movie, should we talk about like who this movie is for? Like, why should you go see it?
who would you recommend it to?
Degenerate people.
I am not going to be, I'm not going to be defending this movie as a good movie, but I am immensely entertained by it, and I've seen it several times, and it continues to grow in prestige in my mind. So Maybe I will be defending it in some way.
Getting dangerously into review territory. But I don't know why. I don't I but I don't regret watching this.
How could you?
And somehow this has got to be one of the most this has got to be one of those degenerate things I've ever seen in live action. Like, I think I've seen stuff like this in, like, weird Japanese, like, animated porn or something, or like, or anime that's trying to be shocking, but I've never seen anything like this in live action. And I've seen a lot of shit.
I'm trying to think if there's anything comparable that I.
And what's worse, right? What really hits you is you walk into this movie like, oh, Plankton, okay, it's a movie about undersea monsters. That's what it's gonna be about.
It's a little more complex than that.
A little bit, yeah.
Speaking of the complexity, so it was written by a guy named, well, John Blush was the story coordinator. I have no idea what that is, but he didn't really do anything else. And the screenplay was written by Richard Bauman, who wrote like one episode of one TV show once. So neither of these people had much of a career, at least in film. I'm sure they had some kind of career.
Don't know. I just imagine these guys filling out a job application and leaving this movie off.
I thought this was interesting. The music was done by Elikania Group, and this is the only thing they ever composed. And I'm wondering if it's just like studio musicians, like just a group of studio musicians who are essentially like making library album material. I don't know. Is any of the cast worth discussing?
The cast is comprised of six human beings that we can see. Two of them are women who are basically interchangeable victims. And then you have a nerd, you have a jock, you have a doctor who may or may not be insane. I don't know what his deal is. And then you have girl you're supposed to care about. There's your cast.
I
The
mean,
dubbing is terrible. This is one of the worst dubs we've it's probably the worst dub we've ever had on this show.
no, I can't defend it. It's pretty bad. But for the most part, I'm fine with the characters. I won't go as far as to say that I like any of them or care about any of them, but I'm at least okay with them. I am not okay with Bobby. Bobby is obnoxious. I could not wait for him to be dispatched, and yet, as much as the movie kept teasing it, it never seemed to happen.
It kind of happens.
Yeah, kind of.
But
I
no,
did notice.
Bobby is probably the most irredeemable part of this movie.
So Dorothy, who is one of the interchangeable girls, women, she, I noticed in the credits that her the actress playing her is named Laura De Palma. And so I was like, is this related to Brian De Palma? Like, could this be his daughter? You know, like director of classics like Carrie. And so I went and looked it up, and then I realized that she's not De Palma, she's De Palma. So anyway, I found that funny.
Baited.
Yeah. I thought maybe this was like an Asia Argento situation or Sofia Coppola, you know, someone famous w worming their way into a production. So let's, before we play the trailer, the I think major component of this movie that demands discussion is the special effects. So what do you think about them overall?
The quality is across the board.
That's so true. There is awful, like Windows 95, all the way to excellent.
They, for some of the more complicated shots, they just kind of deal with it by never showing the entire subject in one frame.
Right.
Which is probably a good way to get around showing something that wouldn't quite have worked altogether. Also, I'd imagine they probably didn't want to, you know, create a giant, sorry, spoilers, like Fishman getup. So instead they made pieces of Fishman getup and just had those individual parts in frame.
I think that's what they did too, and it works for me. All the times they did that, it works. What doesn't work is the like flying fish don't work. That's like, you know, Windows 95 screensaver. And I didn't think it worked when we saw the monsters like standing in the foreground and it was like stop motion animation.
I don't know how else they really would have done that on their budget.
I know, but maybe you could have just stuck to showing less. I mean, like, there was the insinuation that some monster sex happened in that movie we watched a few weeks ago, Dark Waters, or Dark Water. But they only showed little bits and pieces of the monster because they didn't, I don't know if they didn't have the budget or they didn't want it to look stupid. But in this movie, it sometimes looks stupid.
I think it's safe to say this movie just has no boundaries.
That's what I like about it.
Hmm.
But I will say, talking about like who should we recommend this movie to, if you're a fan of like special effects, especially low budget special effects, and you want to see something a little different than what you've seen before, I think you should watch this movie. I think it's worth watching for that reason. So I don't know the history behind this movie, like how it came to be set in Miami. I will say the director said in the interview on the DVD that the most expensive thing about the movie was trying to shoot in Miami, that it was, for whatever reason, he was not expecting the cost. But I just thought it was interesting. Often you see Italian films that are set in New York or set in Boston, or even movies like The Beyond, New Orleans, but you don't see a lot of Miami. A lot of Italian crime movies you do.
Sure, but did they really need to shoot on site for this film?
Honestly, most of it, I'm not even sure if they're real spaces or if they're sound stages or what.
I think there may be a ship, but I don't think the interior of the ship is actually on the ship.
In some ways, I wonder if the movie, like the ship as presented in the movie, is the ship in real life, because that would explain a lot of the sort of oddities of it.
I am almost positive that the interior, the living spaces, are probably a soundstage.
Okay.
That probably is in Italy, the way it's, you know, crafted. You can just tell that this is something not from the United States, the way it's styled.
It's very distinct.
Yeah. But the ship itself, like, what the fuck was filmed in Miami? Like, did the beach, did they literally go all the way to Miami for the beach?
Yeah,
and the city line, the city skyline?
I think so, but Lucio Fulci did it all the time with movies like House by the Cemetery and The Beyond, where he'd come to the United States, film like 15 minutes of footage, put it at the beginning of the movie, and then you could act as if it was an American movie, even though most of it was filmed in Italy and might not even take place in America. They saw it as a marketing gimmick, I think. Like, they thought it would make it more appealing to people in America to go see.
Hmm.
So
a trailer.
Yeah, let's play the trailer, and then we'll talk about... There's not really a story, but... We'll get into the details.
Plankton is the major source of nutrient for fish. It was contaminated by radioactive waste dumped by a ship in this area. It contaminated the bottom of this part of the sea.
Contaminated the plankton?
So this movie is the setup is that our cast of characters, who we already talked about, go out to sea on this little inflatable boat with a motor, but they run out of gas and they're stranded and there's a storm and they have to seek refuge on this mysterious yacht. They call it a yacht, but then later they're like, oh, well, maybe it's a research vessel. And I thought those were probably very different looking things, but maybe not.
Before we even get that far, there's something about the opening credits I want to mention.
Okay.
Where's the movie's title?
I didn't notice it.
Yeah. What's this movie supposed to be called? Like, if you didn't know going into it.
So what I imagine is that when it was initially released, it was released as Plankton. And then when they went to re-release it with the Creatures from the Abyss title, they just lopped the beginning of the credits off. A lot of movies did that.
Because if you're just watching this movie, like, you know, you just stumble across it, the only thing in the credits that resembles a title is Miami, Florida.
Yeah, I wasn't thrown off by that. I just assumed either there wasn't a title or it got lopped off at some point.
Most people would find that a little odd. As far as I'm aware, this movie is called Miami, Florida.
All right.
The trope of dumbass teenagers doing dumb... they're supposed to be teenagers, right?
I thought they were like college students.
Okay, college students. Anyway, dumb young adults getting into dumb situations and acting irrationally is something that has existed throughout cinematic history. But I feel like these five take it to a new level. They go out into the ocean, the whole ass ocean, on this dinky ass raft, and don't bother to come back until nighttime.
By which time there is a lightning storm.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Hey, this is the setup for like an episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive.
I can imagine like stupid. Like I probably could have gotten in a situation like this at some point when I was like a late teenager. Like I did stupid shit, but there's at least a couple people in the group who are presented to us as serious, rational people, and I would assume that they would have overridden the other ones, you know, staying out that late or going that far or getting involved in this scheme. I don't know. It seems weird.
So our main protagonist is Mike. He's the nerd and the smartest because he wears glasses.
Yeah, I didn't really think of him as a nerd. Like, he has a fiance. He's the Bobby doesn't have anybody. Like, the only person who's presented to us as being in a successful relationship is Mike. I thought he was supposed to be like kind of a cross between a leading man and an intellectual.
So, wow, that's really biased. You just kind of like insinuated that nerds can't get married and can't be leading men. That is so backwards.
What I'm saying is that if we're looking at archetypes, right, in the early 90s in a movie like this, if they were going to portray a nerd, I would expect them to portray it very differently. That's just my expectation.
Speaking of this movie's year, this looks like it was filmed maybe 10 years before 1994.
I don't know the. Because the interior design and the aesthetics of this boat are so strange, I can't tell what's like a period influence and what's them trying to be futuristic and what's them just being weird. Do you know what I mean?
Kinda, but I was convinced this movie was from the 80s until I looked up otherwise.
Well, I think that in some ways, Italy might have been behind the United States in terms of like fashion and stuff. But again, I could be wrong. Just making shit up right now. But like, all right, I just want to bring it up at the beginning because it's one of my favorite things about the movie. What do you think of the clock?
Alvaro Passeri, truly the prophet of our times, foresaw the future of the smart home like 30 years before its advent.
Do you think this is supposed to be futuristic? Like, is it supposed to be taking place in the future?
I don't think the movie's futuristic, but I believe the boat is supposed to be so high tech that it just has a level of automation that has like been seen unpaired, has never been seen ever matched. It's just weird that this boat has a level of AI sentience meant for, as you were saying, a movie in the far future. Although I think the real setup is supposed to be just that these scientists have technology so advanced that you just cannot find this anywhere else.
Yeah, so the clock I'm referring to is like it's a very cartoonish mermaid that's like it's built into the wall, but it comes off of the wall. It's three-dimensional. And it's got a one giant eye with an eyelash that flips up and down very dramatically and it moves back and forth. And it occasionally says things, including what time it is, and it also makes a really weird noise.
I give good time.
Is it even a mermaid? I think it's just a fish in a wig. Wait.
I thought it was a mermaid.
It's a fish in a wig, which is actually like very foreshadowing the rest of this film.
Well, regardless, whoever came up with it is a genius of design. This is a timeless classic image, the mermaid with the single eye. I would put this on my wall in a heartbeat, especially if it talked to me like this. I'm obsessed with this thing.
It doesn't stop at the clock, though. They have a smart shower.
Yeah, the shower I was not as enamored with. When you get in the shower, there's like a little TV screen or a little monitor with a image of like a typically sexy woman in it, and she's talking to you real sensuously, like, "Do you want me to be hot or cold?" And it's really dumb. I don't know. I wasn't a fan.
So it's not really explained why a research vessel has this going on, right? It's
yeah,
never
it's
explained.
No, it's not, and it's very odd. It's the weirdest aspect of this movie to me.
All right, so here's the setting, right? The teenagers come across this marine biology research boat. And on the outside, it looks like as industrial as you would expect this to be. And then they go on the inside, and it's like a 70s Italian penthouse. But it isn't just decked out like some sort of like love hotel, because there's still a nautical theme to it. And so they're insinuating that a bunch of men, a bunch of, because I don't think there are any women on this boat. They're in the science department, right? We've only just seen men strewn about with lab coats.
Yeah, they don't show us any evidence of women.
Right? So there's a bunch of nerd, like doctors and professors, cohabitating in these very eccentric rooms, some of them with bunk beds.
Yeah.
And they're surrounded by sexual imagery.
The rooms have like foil walls, and then they're bathed in a single color light, and everything is that color. So like there are some rooms that are entirely blue, and it's very striking. There's mirrored mosaics in the floors and in some of the walls of like mutant fish creatures. What do you think the in what context were these mosaics made?
Right? Like the idea is that these doctors and scientists are here to research fish that have been mutated by radioactive plankton. So I guess what we're supposed to believe is that the company who bankrolled this experiment knew in advance what they were going to do, and then some interior decorator went all fucking out in the guts of this ship. Like, oh, you're going to be researching monster fish? Well, let me show you this mosaic.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense.
But the top two strangest things are both in Bobby's room. And that's a giant stuffed bear that just sort of stands against the wall, chilling. And a lamp. It kind of looks like a garden gnome, like a you know, wee man with a beard, has a gigantic phallus protruding from the front of it with a light ball on top of the phallus. And in order to turn it on, you have to jerk it off.
This is what gives men body image issues. How are we supposed to live up to this?
The only person we ever see turn it on is a woman. I found that interesting.
Although somehow Bobby does turn it on.
Yeah, we just don't. They don't show us that scene.
They don't show us. And we're talking about this. Like, if you haven't seen this, this schlong is like a third of its body.
Or more. Yeah.
Like, what were these doctors doing in between sciencing, right?
Well, apparently they were at least drinking, because there's several bars, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've seen this movie, you know what these people have seen. You want an open bar. You need an open bar. It's required.
Yeah. So there are rooms that are just like laboratories. And this is where the young people who climb aboard the yacht, the first place they go is this sort of laboratory room. And there's all these strange fish in jars and in freezers. I think whoever came up with this set, like created these fish and put them on the scene this way, like I think this room's really well done.
Yeah, it looks like a room where science is done.
Yeah. But I mean, the fish, like especially the frozen fish with the icicles hanging off of them, I thought they were really cool.
My favorite part of the laboratory is when Bobby sees a unidentifiable substance, dips his fingers in it, smells it, and then licks it.
People in movies do this all the time, and I'm always confused as to why. I mean, I often see detectives do it, and so I'm thinking, okay, well, they're tasting to see if it's blood. But who puts someone else's blood in their mouth?
Nobody. Like, this isn't a thing.
So it's really strange to me.
Usually it's unbelievable, but Bobby is missing so many brain cells that I could see him doing it.
Can we just go through a quick like conversation about what makes Bobby suck?
There's nothing redeemable about him.
Yeah, that's right. There's not.
There's a trope in horror movies where, and this is probably the worst, somehow this is the worst part of the film, where guy goes to investigate scary phenomenon, and then pretends to be got by whatever he's investigating to scare the rest of the group. He does this shit like 6 times.
Yeah, it's obnoxious. He's the character who, like, he thinks he's the funniest person in the group. He thinks he's the sexiest person in the group, and he thinks he should be the leader of the group. So he's going to interject on every exchange and make it some sort of sexual come on or joke. And so it's just constantly obnoxious because the humor doesn't work. Like, he's not actually funny. If he was actually funny, I guess the movie would work a little better. He'd still be obnoxious.
So going back to the setting, this group shows up to this boat right after the fish start revolting, right?
Yeah, I think it's been a matter of days, if not hours, because on their way to the yacht, they find one of the dead bodies in the ocean. They say it looks like it's been nibbled by piranhas.
But they mostly seem unfazed by this and, you know, get on the boat anyway with reckless abandon. They're on this giant research vessel, just a giant boat. It doesn't even matter what it's for. A giant boat floating in the ocean. They don't know where they are and they can't find anyone on it. Yet somehow they're not immediately put off by this. In fact, Bobby says, man, you know, this boat probably belongs to a bunch of drug dealers that abandoned it. And as we know from U.S. maritime law, finders keepers, this is our yacht now.
Yeah, he says something like, my uncle can change the registration to be in our names easily.
Like, obviously, Bobby is being ridiculous here, right? He's completely serious. But first off, you can't just take a yacht, right? You have to kind of explain where the yacht came from to somebody in government. Like, you have to register it before you even dock it. Like, do you think this man could afford docking a yacht?
I think what he was getting at is that his uncle could, like, do some sort of backdoor deal or, you know, pull some strings. But as far as storing it, I don't know. Maybe he's a privileged rich kid and his dad will do whatever he wants. I don't know.
And again, this is like a yacht interior only. The outside is a giant scientific vessel. I don't even know where you could dock something like this.
I don't know. They make it seem like it's very large.
And then following his logic, right? Let's say this does belong to a bunch of drug dealers. If you are planning on ripping off the kind of dealers who can afford a boat this large, they will have no problem coming after you.
No, he thinks it was just abandoned, that they don't want it anymore. When the question comes up of like, well, who killed the scientists? Bobby's like, well, the drug dealers didn't need a chemist anymore, so they just got rid of him. That's just how he thinks about it.
Later on, they find a surviving scientist in the bowels of the ship. And upon bringing him up, this man is not in a good way. He's like frothing at the mouth, struggling to breathe. It's amazing he's even alive. We don't even know what's wrong with him. And they just sort of lay him out on the couch and tell him he's going to be okay. And that's the extent of their first aid knowledge.
Yeah, because Bobby's like, he's not dying, or I think he says he's overdosing, but he's not dying.
Well, Bobby's suggestion is, man, this guy's probably a lost cause, but because he's still alive, you know, we can't own the yacht anymore. Because in his mind, that's the criteria. None of the owners can be on the boat for him to steal it.
No, he literally says, let's throw him overboard.
Yeah, let's throw him overboard. And he's completely serious.
Yeah.
Bobby here is ready to commit felony murder, first degree murder, for a random boat he stumbled across in the dark.
Well, also, when he was down in the basement before they, or the bowels of the ship before they discovered the scientist, they discover bags of white powder, which Bobby thinks like confirms his theory. You know, here's where the drugs are stored. And he's like, I can tell they're drugs. I've done every drug there is.
I've done every drug.
He might not have said that exactly. He says something like that.
Yeah.
And so he says that they can get rich off of it, but that he's also going to try it later. If we find out later what this actually is, it's actually like plankton, right? Like dried plankton or something.
Yeah, it's the plankton. It's the radioactive plankton that they took out of the ocean, but for whatever reason, they turned it into like a powder, maybe so that they could administer it to test subjects to monitor the effects.
That makes sense. I do find it interesting, though, that like this movie's theory of how radioactive or radiation caused mutation works. Like if you consume something or you're injected with something or, you know, what have you, it works to like transform you instantaneously almost.
Well, about instantaneously, but this is definitely the kind of thing where once you're exposed to it, you're on a clock. There's no getting away from this.
Right. So there's no, my point is that there's no degrees. There's no gradation here. It's like, if you're exposed to this in any way, you're either going to die or become a fish monster, one or the other. Like, the one girl I thought was going to be okay, that the flying fish just bites her on the neck, but even that was enough. She couldn't recover.
Yeah, by the way, there's flying fish. So that's when shit really starts to go downhill. A couple of characters are in the lab, and then these fish who've just been on display the whole time, harmlessly, one of them decides to just break out of its little tank and fly around the room. No wings. It's just as if it's swimming.
Yeah. They say that, like, by this point, Mike has figured out how to read information on the computer, which is a very futuristic, like, clear, flat screen where you can see. I don't know what the value of this would be, because you can see through the monitor. So it's very distracting, because you're trying to read words on top of images. I don't know. Did you share that frustration?
The idea of like information floating in space or on a clear screen has been a trope in a future trope for, God, as long as I can remember.
Yeah, but why did anyone ever think it was going to be a thing?
Well, what's kind of funny is like, Well, one, I think it can be a thing. Like if you accent the letters enough, make them a distinctive color compared to what's in the background. Like, I think it could work. But why? Why would you need it?
That's my big question. But anyway,
outside of aesthetics, but like it's kind of funny because the way he's looking at fish information is like when you go to an aquarium and you see like the little display plates next to the exhibits.
Uh-huh.
Same energy, right? You have like the little carved out picture, like a silhouette of the fish. And then you have like the fun facts and the scientific name. He's basically just cycling through a bunch of those.
But this is where he finds out that the fish live underwater or on land. And so I guess living on land means that you either grow legs or you fly.
I didn't expect to see a whole ass fish flying through the interior of the boat, man.
And it's the worst effect in the movie.
It's terrible.
Do you think it's just CGI?
It's not CGI. It's just like input over the actual footage. So there's two layers. There's the layer they're filming, and then there's the flying fish layer that they put on top of it. This effect is used all throughout the movie. Like rain, like most of the rain is just like an overlaid effect.
Yeah, the it resembles early CGI, and it's very unfortunate. It's distractingly bad. But I guess it lends to the movie being goofy. And this is a very goofy movie.
No, this is Creatures from the Abyss.
Oh, is there a movie called A Very Goofy Movie?
Yes, it's a Disney film.
Oh, I see. Well, let's talk about the different things he reads about that he finds in the computer system, because they're kind of sprinkled throughout several scenes. But first of all, is the insinuation that there's some sort of structure at the bottom of the ocean that there are other scientists in?
Yeah, so there is a diving bell on the base of this ship that goes down into a research center. And at one point, our characters accidentally trigger a camera view of that facility, and they basically see the rest of the scientists just dead down there.
Yeah, with weird like fish parts coming out of their mouths.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he says that they had found fish that they thought were extinct. And okay, is it that these incredibly rare, thought to be extinct fish also eat radioactive plankton? Or is it they were normal fish that are common and they mutated and they thought they were extinct fish?
All right, this is a little bit convoluted, but from what I understand, there was a fish once thought extinct that now has a habitat here. And coincidentally, at the same time, some nameless mega corporation dumped a bunch of toxic waste into the ocean at this one specific spot, which radiated the plankton food supply and caused the fish to become monstrous.
Yeah, but he says that there were different species found that were thousands of years old. You know, thousands of years thought extinct. Yeah, I guess it's just a big coincidence.
Yeah, just giant coincidence. You know, I was really hoping that they would drop a reason why some company decided to bankroll this research. Because this sort of thing doesn't happen like with some sort of like magnanimous benefactor, right? Like there has to be some sort of profit motive. And I swear to God, I thought I was going to get into like aphrodisiac territory.
Well, it's very weird because later it starts making it sexual. And I didn't really understand how that works. Like, Mike reads on the computer later that the fish are sexually aggressive when erotically stimulated by inquisitive minds. So I'm not even sure what that means.
He later pulls a book off a shelf and is reading it before, for some reason, trying to go to sleep. Would you even try to sleep on this boat?
No.
No, not at all. But these characters try multiple times. He's reading a book before bedtime, and it says, you know, when the fish are in a population consisting only of males, they get very predatory and very gay. I need to find the line. I had to double back on it to make sure I heard it right.
There's a whole thing about them being sexual. Like, at some point, the Mike yells at the doctor that they find, "When did you start fucking fish?" And it's never really explained, but...
Both of these scenes where he reads out of a textbook feels like lines. The dialogue is there to make sure you're paying attention. Because it's absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it's nonsense. And they throw sexuality in it, I think, just to be, like, provocative or... I mean, I don't think the movie's actually trying to be erotic. It's. I think it's supposed to be humorous and provocative.
I don't know if this movie is trying to be humorous, but it's definitely pushing boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, how would you describe the tone of this movie?
Italian?
It is very Italian, and it's very 80s or early 90s. But it's got a strange tone because it would be impossible to take seriously. The characters really, well, I guess Bobby is so overwhelmingly not serious that it gives a pallor of unseriousness to the whole film. But because of the limited setting and how strange the setting is, the mood that creates is very weird. This is probably an impossible thing to explain, but did you ever, like, through school or other organizations, do, like, an overnight lock-in?
No, but I'm familiar with it.
All right. So, like, I did Boy Scouts when I was a kid, and we used to do a lock-in every year at the YMCA. And so we would be in the YMCA all night, and you could go anywhere you wanted. And, you know, some people played basketball all night, and some people, like, set up in a room and played board games, and some people were in the swimming pool, and a lot of the like adult leaders were circled around a TV watching movies. But my point in bringing it up is that it feels like an alternative world. Like, you've stepped into a setting and you are free to explore that setting, but it's not representative of reality. I guess being in, like, a theme park would be a similar experience. That's what this movie makes me think of, is, like, this yacht really does establish this strange tone and mood that sets it up as an alternative reality.
I don't know if lock-ins still exist anymore, but what you described basically sounds like most people's first playthrough of Skyrim.
Their first what?
Playthrough of Skyrim. You're not going to get that.
Yeah,
the kids listening will get it.
Oh, okay. I'm sure we have many of those. This is out of nowhere, but what did you think of the sort of constant fish vision that we get? I think we're supposed to be seeing things from the perspective of the giant fish monster at the end.
No, I don't think that's it. It looks like Roomba vision, first of all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's just supposed to be like a small fish scurrying about the cabin that nobody sees.
That's the weirdest part, is this we get as viewers... We get an almost omnipresent fish vision where we're looking at the world, you know, really low down with this sort of bubble lens. And yet when the characters are staring directly at it, they're not seeing anything. I found that. I mean, again, it's like the ineptitudes in this movie do add to its humorousness or to its humor, but they're still ineptitudes.
At one point, a character steps on it and just says, oh, that was slimy. But then that's it. There's nothing down there when she looks.
And she's not bothered by that fact at all. Another action that I found suspicious is at one point, the girls go to try to find something to eat for dinner. And they find some fish in the refrigerator. And they decide to fry them up and eat them for dinner. Would you have eaten those fish?
No.
No way. They don't question what kind of fish it is. They do smell it and say, oh, it's so fresh, which I don't think you would say about smelling a fish, but maybe I'm wrong. When you eat this fish, apparently the first stage in your sort of metamorphosis is that you vomit up bugs, which I found really strange because like the types of beetles they show in the vomit don't have any relationship to fish.
No, there's like a Japanese rhinoceros beetle or some shit in there.
Right. So that almost seemed supernatural. Like it would have made sense in a supernatural movie, but it doesn't make sense here at all.
At first, I kept trying to look for the signs of these bugs coming back in. And I think about halfway through the movie, I just gave up. Like it's Italian. They just threw it in there.
I bet they originally, like in the script, assuming there was one, I don't know how much of a script there was, but maybe in the script it said that she vomited up like little creatures. And so they were supposed to be like mutant fish creatures, but at the last minute, they were like, well, we can't build these things. Like we're out of money. Just put some bugs in there. That's how I imagine this happening.
Man, imagine all the effort you go through to show flying fish and mutated fishmen and whipping tentacles, and then you just cut the last corner with generic plastic bugs.
Yeah.
How could you do that to this production? The scene where she vomits is great. She vomits right into the camera. And it's not just vomit. Like, if I saw this come out of somebody, like, without the bugs, I would be very concerned.
Oh, me too. It looks like runny eggs, kind of.
Yeah, like gacky, thick, coagulated eggs. And they never clean it up. She barfs in the carpeted bathroom. And that puddle stays there throughout the entire film.
Yeah, they even
the consistency.
There's a point where Bobby is inside of the bathroom and he opens the door and he's standing right where that puddle is. It doesn't show him standing in it, but he is. And then later we see the puddle is still there and it's like, did he stand in that?
Well, like, it was a character, very bothersome. Another character that uses the restroom has to walk around it.
Yeah.
Like, it's there. It's very much there. At some point during the flying fish scene, Bobby gets bit on the ass by a fish. Do you think this is what gave him his transformation?
No, I thought it was him snorting the plankton.
Oh, it could have been that, yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, all their transformations are kind of unique. But
Bobby's is certainly the reason you would watch this film, right?
Yeah. So let's slow down and talk about this scene in detail. After Bobby has been trying to seduce any of the women in the movie for the entire movie, one girl whose name I don't know is apparently swayed by this and comes to his room late at night. And she strokes the gnome penis until the lamp comes on. And he's kind of playing it cool, like laying back and not showing her any interest, smoking a cigarette. And she's like, are you worried about my virginity? And then his attempt, like this seduction scene, if that's what you want to call it, is the worst possible way to get someone into bed with you. Right? The most offensive way possible.
What's really offensive about it is that she actually wants to at first. And then as soon as she expresses any disinterest, because anybody should rightfully not want to sleep with Bobby, that's when he gets really into it and aggressive. So yeah. It's like her not enjoying it is a big piece of it for him.
Yeah, I don't know how else you explain his actions, right? He's been trying the whole movie to get with her, and then suddenly he's acting like he's not interested until she attempts to escape the room, which he has locked, and now it's exciting for him. That's the only interpretation I can think of. But anyhow, as they're having sex, Bobby starts to make some really horrible faces. And then we see him vomit out a gigantic tongue. And afterwards, a huge fish monster starts to emerge. Is this the first like big fish monster we see in the movie?
Yes.
So what did you think? How did you react to it?
Well, so the tongue comes out of his mouth. And then I think just keeps like autonomously licking. What's her name? Julie?
Oh, is it Julie? Yeah,
yeah, it's Julie.
The tongue seems to be alive still, like moving on its own.
The camera is doing like a 360 rotato around Bobby as he is doing his transformation. So you see actual Bobby and then a rotation into like stage one and then stage two and then stage three. And it's cut between like all these other gross body horror things going on. But really you have a giant fish head emerging from his mouth, which then becomes Bobby. Like it, the rest of the flesh is just discarded in the middle of coitus. And this fish is going ham. Like it is thrusting on this girl. And she doesn't, somehow, against all odds, doesn't realize what's going on until like a bunch of fish oil or something falls on her face and she tastes it. And then she opens her eyes to the horror that's going on. And man, no one deserves this.
But then immediately afterwards, she doesn't remember that it happened.
Very conveniently.
Right. Why doesn't she remember?
Well, they're interrupted. I mean, I'm assuming, well, actually, we know Bobby finished. And then Mike comes in as a response to Julie screaming.
You've skipped the scene where Bobby's eyeballs pop out and land in Julie's mouth.
Yeah, an eyeball lands in Julie's mouth as she's screaming and she starts to gag and has to spit it out. Who wrote this?
Like, all right, so that the like eyeball flying into the mouth thing, we've seen that in other movies. Like Evil Dead 2 does it, right? Most famously, I think. But here it's not, it doesn't seem like they're going for a comedic effect. It seems like they're actually just trying to be gross. This kind of reminds me of the eyeball eating scene in The Burning Moon.
Mike, forever traumatized, but from what he has seen or what he has walked into, to his credit, immediately grabs a spear gun that apparently has been in a utility closet this whole time. And when he comes back to put Bobby down, Bobby's gone with a trail leading into the closet. And then, of course, the closet has a giant caustic hole in the back where he escaped.
It's like acidic, right? Like his slime melted away the wall.
But then somehow Bobby immediately disappears to the other side of the boat in the smart bathroom back in human form. And we know it's actually him because off camera, well, off from the view of the other protagonists, we see a tentacle retracting into his body.
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought
not only not only is this a fish man, it also has tentacles.
But while that's happening, when Julie wakes up, this is the oddest interaction. Margaret and Julie are talking, and Julie's like, "Why did you strip me?" And Margaret says, "You were making love with Bobby." And Julie says, "What? If he laid one fin on me, I'll make him eat one of the fish from the lab." Was that supposed to be humorous? What is that line?
I guess.
Because, like, she doesn't remember, but he has fins. I don't need to explain this. Everyone understands the line. It's just weird.
Oh, no. This... It's just a little insensitive, you know?
Just a little, yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Oh. Does it... Maybe there's an in-universe explanation for this, but, like, all... Two of the women in this group are just, like, perpetually wearing swimsuits. At some point, you would wear something else.
Well, they don't have their own clothes there, though. So they would have to wear clothes that the crew left. And there were no women in that group, so...
So you can't just wear, like, a men's fucking button-down?
These women are too image-conscious for that, I guess. Or the, you know, the makers of the movie were too dictatorial.
Man, these characters get exposed to some horrendous shit. And then the next scene, they just walk it off. They're like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to try to get some sleep.
Yeah.
So I guess we need to talk about fiance Margaret and her experience with the smart bathroom.
Yeah, when it starts to malfunction.
For no reason, yeah.
It tells her to, in the case of the toilet paper malfunctioning, to use dollar bills or newspapers.
There's a message that comes out that says, you know, constipation detected, you know, activating vacuum, because that's how it works.
It's a very strange scene. The whole smart bathroom aspect is strange. Like, who decided to include that?
I don't know, man. This is like the nightmare bathroom from Epcot. The toilet paper dispenses from a slit in the ceiling.
Yeah, so you can't, like, manually get any. If the system stops working, you're screwed.
The shower just has what's supposed to be live plants in it.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And then all the time, the entire time you have this, like, digital woman ASMR whispering intrusive thoughts into your ear when you just want to wash your hands.
No, you have to interact with this.
It's almost a blessing when Bobby's tentacle dick or whatever plows through the sink drain and tries to strangle her. just to get away from the bathroom, you know?
It like obliterates the bathroom system. I don't think she talks after that. I thought that scene was pretty well done. It reminded me of the scene in The Blob where the blob burst out of the sink.
it's funny that you just compare something so iconic to this film.
I mean, the comparison, when I say, oh, this reminded me of this much better movie that I would rather be watching, that's kind of the experience. Although I do think this movie's fun. I don't want to disparage it too much.
Yeah, so Mike saves his fiance by chopping, using a straight razor to chop through the tentacle.
Yeah, first he just tries to wrestle it off, but that doesn't work.
I was convinced she was going to survive the movie.
I thought she was too.
And then she got bit by a fish, and that was it.
Yeah. I think her getting bit comes later, but I just want to mention the scene where Mike decides to destroy all the fish. And so he has this like prehistoric bone that he picks up off of a shelf, and he proceeds to, you know, whack all of the glass fish containers.
His unbridled berserker nerd rage.
Like, you know that line in Troll 2, the oh my god line, where it's extended out for, you know, seconds and seconds and seconds, and everyone thinks that scene is iconic and makes, you know, light of it and all that. This is just as ridiculous, if not more so. Especially because this guy is not like... All right, so like Arnold Schwarzenegger could do that line and do it tongue in cheek and badass and like make it work. This guy cannot.
Well, I don't know if the guy can't make it work, but the dubbing guy definitely did not make it work.
No, it's very bad. It's not too long after this where Margaret chooses this moment after they've been fighting over fish to tell him that she's pregnant and wants to get married.
And instead of immediately being terrified because they're on a fucking death trap boat in the middle of the ocean, he's like, wow, that's great, honey.
Yeah, he's excited.
Oh god, there's the part where he like fucking bats a fish into a automated sausage grinder for no reason.
Yeah. I think someone just thought it would look funny. Or cool, whatever.
Oh, but right, so, this rampage was brought on by the fiance getting bit. This movie does a great job of giving a very sentimental backstory just before something terrible happens to somebody.
And by great job, you mean it consistently does that.
Consistently, yes. Yeah. Like, it is very thorough.
So I think we should start wrapping up. You want to talk about how each character ends up, like each one's fate?
Let's start with Julie. No, wait, let's go in order. All right, let's
so the first one is Dorothy.
Yeah, start with Dorothy. So she ate the fish
and she turns into, I actually think this is really cool, she turns into like a giant fish monster with crab claws, but it's the monster springs out of her back and her face is still there making expressions too. And so it's like one body is on top of the other body. I thought it looked cool.
This reminded me of The Thing. Speaking of better movies to compare this to.
Yeah.
But it's almost as if the fish part is completely separate and sentient from Dorothy. Like, she knows what's going on, but doesn't have any control over it.
Yeah, it's actually kind of disturbing from like a body horror aspect to think of being, conscious and aware as this monster was just using your body.
Unfortunately, they couldn't afford to do an entire like full screen shot of what was going on, but this is probably the most effective scene in the film that doesn't make you want to just turn it off, right?
I mean, I think this scene is awesome. They're trying to escape the room and the monster opens its mouth and a fish flies out at the door.
Yeah.
And like Mike barely gets the door closed in time. Until that happened, I was really down with this scene.
And that's how Dorothy ends the movie. Stuck in that bedroom.
And then Julie, who had sex with the fish monster, Bobby, the fish monster. She starts to beat on her stomach, like yelling, ow, 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 ow. She says she's in too much pain to move and she's laying in the hallway. And later we see that she's been laying fish eggs.
Yeah, she just starts laying a bunch of roux right in the middle of the hallway. And they just leave her there.
They act like when Mike sees that, he acts like she's too far gone. Like it's there's no saving her now. She's going to become something.
In his defense, like if a bite can turn you into something, what is going on in her body?
Yeah. Who knows?
So now we're down to Mike.
And Margaret.
Margaret and the doctor.
Oh, yeah, the doctor. Because we talked about Bobby already. So Margaret, we already said, like, she doesn't make it, but I thought she was going to. All that happened to her is she got bit on the neck. But she starts to have a pain in her neck. And she tells Mike at the end, promise me that you'll kill me. Because she can feel herself starting to change.
I think she also starts to leak eggs.
Well, it's weird. We keep getting shots of like eggs cascading down the stairs and like flooding rooms. And I was like, are they suggesting that Julie is birthing all of these and they're like flooding the yacht? I don't know what they were trying to show.
Well, I mean, we know she's pregnant. We know Margaret is pregnant, so maybe like that changed the child somehow into eggs. That's the kind of logic this movie has.
Sure. Yeah, I think they use the logic of if it looked cool, we'll do it.
So then she realizes her husband does not, or fuck, her fiance does not have the strength to pull the trigger. So she pulls the spear gun on herself and shoots herself right in the face.
Which does not seem feasible at all to me.
It could happen, but it would take an immense amount of will to shoot yourself in the face with a spear gun. I also don't think you would immediately die, depending on where it hit you.
Yeah, I don't think so. But she definitely dies.
So then it's just Mike and the doctor. The doctor who has basically just been cowering under a staircase this whole time. In like a delirium. He's no longer frothing from the mouth. He can now not only walk around, he can now talk. And he tells this man who just watched his fish-infected fiance commit suicide. He tells him, leave her, man. There's more pussy out in the world.
My other favorite moment with him is earlier in the film when Mike is like, how long have you been fucking fish? The doctor's response is, they were old enough. And then Mike says, I understand. These things happen. Like, some of the conversations in this movie are bonkers.
I feel like there were two separate scripts in two different recording studios. And once they mashed them together, they realized their mistake and just said, fuck it, and ran it. Mike gets the doctor to the main deck, where then Bobby's magnificent fish body shows up. and attacks them. The doctor, who we haven't mentioned, has been holding on to this syringe full of like dry ice liquid this entire movie, pulls it out to inject Bobby, presumably to finish the terror once and for all. But he just gets immediately devoured.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close.
Preceding this, when Mike, right before Mike sees the monster, he sees that this hatch is opened, and he's like, who opened the radioactive container?
Yeah, like, what radioactive container? Nobody mentioned a radioactive container at any point in the movie.
No,
and it's open now.
Why would he know about it?
Because it probably said radioactive, and he's like the only literate person in the group.
Yeah, but there could be many radioactive containers. He said
is the radioactive chamber.
Maybe he read about it on the computer.
I don't know, man. Everyone kind of defers to Mike as the expert just because he can read.
Well, he's willing to read. The rest just want to drink or have sex or sleep. But it seems like he's going to escape. He has, we left it out, but he has lit the yacht on fire at this point. And there's a countdown, of course, to the ship exploding. A snarky countdown that says things like, "Are you taking me seriously? I still hear your footsteps." It fit in with the rest of the setting, but I thought it was really bad.
It basically just starts shouting like, "Danger, danger, Will Robinson."
Yeah.
A bunch of strobe lights and shit going on.
And so he jumps off the boat just in time for it to explode, grabs a flotation device, but then we see that on something floating are some of the embryo things, the like mutant fish embryos. And then something gets his face and he screams, probably a flying fish.
It's the fish vision that we've been seeing the whole movie. It gets the last kill.
So do you think all the fish vision is one entity, or do you think it's many different fish?
Impossible to say, but I would assume it's just one very wily fish. And remember, fish can't see directly ahead of them because their eyes are on the sides of their heads. So this fish has basically been like strafing on the floor like the entire time.
Or it's got like one eye closed.
Oh, you know what? It could be like the mermaid clock, right?
Right.
Right.
Cyclops fish.
And that's how the movie ends, with a giant, poorly done ship explosion. And nobody survives. Presumably the fish are now out in the wild.
Yeah.
The opening shot of this film on the beach has what appears to be a dead fish stuck in a net.
Yeah, but it looks really cool. It's really eerie, actually.
And I kind of like suspect maybe that's one of the escaped fish, you know? Maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Like the problem has already spread. These guys just wandered into ground zero at the worst possible time.
Yeah, that sounds right. Well, on that note, let's get final thoughts and a rating out of 4.
I should have known better. I walked into this movie thinking it was just going to be an undersea monster film. And, you know, for the first maybe like 20 minutes, it's some pretty typical boring lead up. But then we're just treated to true degeneracy in all the set piece like horrors that happen in piecemeal throughout the film starting from here. The dumbest part is definitely the flying fish. Like there's a scene where Mike and Bobby are hunting a flying fish in the laboratory. And at one point, the fish just sort of slaps Bobby across the face with its tail. Yeah.
We don't see it. We just hear the smack.
And that shit is in stark contrast to the dark imagery later of a woman in the prime of her life birthing a whole clutch of eggs in a hallway before she dies. This movie's absurd. No one is taking this seriously. To be straight up, this movie is terrible. But man, it is an experience to watch. This is the kind of movie like you show your partner for shock value. You're like, you know, I experienced this trauma, so now someone else has to experience it. It's like the curse from the ring. Someone else has to watch the videotape so that you've cleansed your soul. The hentai imagery of like giant fish monster thrusting into a woman is probably something I'm not going to forget anytime soon. But that doesn't necessarily mean this is... Where do you go from here? Where do you go from here?
This was his first movie.
This is a man's first movie. And producers saw this and thought, you know what? We need to give this man more money. There's no way the other films are this crazy, right?
No, they look rather dull.
I guess we all have that wild period in our lives, right?
You know, I don't. His newest one might be wild. I'm going to check it out. I'll report back.
It's, you know, some people just kind of, you know, have like a period where they do some drugs, like psychedelic drugs, and, you know, they grow out of it. This man just had to make a fish rape movie. You get out of his system early. You know, no joke. This is the worst dubbing we've ever had on a film ever. It's not even close. It's indefensible. You know, that's basically the way to explain this movie. It's indefensible. The special effects crew gave up with like half of the scenes. The dubbing was probably done by a bunch of people who never met each other. But, you know, despite all that, normally, you know, a movie this bad, we would just recommend you don't watch. Like, you know, if you know, hey, one star, don't watch this. This is like one star, don't look away. Like, you have to see this. You have to see it to believe that somebody actually committed this to film. we've both have seen like Troll and Troll 2, and like, you know, the reputations they have are maybe blown a little bit out of proportion just because there's a lot of stuff like that out there. I feel like this is actually at that bad level. I don't know why this isn't more well known. Well, maybe because it only came out in theaters and then didn't come out to Blu-ray till like what, the 2000s.
Yeah, it came out on VHS and DVD in the early 2000s, but I don't think the original release of this got a VHS release in the United States. I could be wrong. I've just never seen one or heard of one.
Well, much like the history of deep sea exploration, you know, man keeps going farther and farther into the ocean, finding more alien and nondescript and fantastical monsters in the deep. This is just like that. Giant tentacled fish man. Yo, one star. I don't know. I don't know where to go from here.
All right. Well, Leland laid out pretty much everything that's bad about the movie. I would emphasize that the acting and dubbing combined are quite unfortunate. Some of these special effects are terrible. But here are the things that I like about this movie and why I like watched it multiple times and will probably watch it multiple more times. One, I think that a movie can't just be bad. It has to be bad in some unique way that you're never going to find anywhere else. I think that's what makes Troll 2 stand out and why it has developed the following it has, because it's not just bad. It's bizarre. Like, who even came up with this bad? And that's where this movie is for me. And that makes it very entertaining to watch. I think the movie is actually successful in its setting. I think the interior of the ship is brilliant. It reminds me of other Italian filmmakers like Dario Argento and Lamberto Bava in terms of like setting up a location. Things like the clock, the mermaid clock, and the shower, it just add these eccentricities that truly make it feel like you're in another world. If the rest of the movie like lived up to its setting, this would be an amazing experience. And I also think tonally it's really weird. Doesn't really give you a character to latch on to. You're basically just watching these people be destroyed because they're all idiots anyway. Particularly Bobby, who is so obnoxious that it tends to drag down the rest of the movie. With all that said, I do think you should watch this if you have not seen it, especially if you like Italian horror movies or you like monster movies. I think, or if you happen to like mutant fish movies, you should seek this out if you haven't seen it already. I think it's relatively easy to, well, the director has put it on YouTube, so it's easy to find. I don't know if you remember this, but back when we did Mutant Hunt, do you remember?
Yeah.
I gave it 3.5 stars.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give this one 3.5 stars for the same reason.
All right. No, I to be clear, I would rather watch a bad movie than a boring one.
Agreed.
And this is definitely probably one of the most tasteless films we have watched in a while.
What's its competition? What do you think are the other most tasteless films we've done?
Are they going to put me on the spot? Okay.
I mean, for me, Janie would be way up there.
I think Janie is up there.
And Evil Come, Evil Go.
Evil Come, Evil Go was the other one. That I'm having a hard time remembering titles right now, but the Wings Hauser film, the Satanist Wings Hauser film.
Mind, Body, and Soul.
Mind, Body, and Soul. That's three. Do I need to keep going?
How about Rollerblade?
That's nowhere near this quality. No, Rollerblade is not on that list.
Leland, any last words?
Thank you for your continued support.
Beautiful. Have a good one, everybody.
Oh, The Suckling. It's also a film that is of zero fucking class. Ha ha ha!